Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Hour 1 of Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Kayla Menzie, your host. We have a lot of interesting things for you this week, starting off with Glenn Olson and the rest of the news team bringing you news for the week. Then we have my Exploring the Arts Entertainment segment, where I will be talking with Jerry Tovo, a photographer from St. Louis, Missouri. After that, we have Sam Wenzel with a review of the movie Old Boys. After that, Tyler Henderson and Kyle Neighbor will bring you local and national sports, followed by a sports commentary with Tyler and Ryan Laughlin. Next, we'll have Jake Paulus with his music pick for the week, where he will be featuring some music from the metal genre. And finally, we have my event pick of the week. Again, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Kayla Menzie, your host for Hour 1. Here is Glenn Olson with news.
Thank you for listening to Blue Gold News. I'm Glenn Olson. One of campus's traditionally single-sex dorms is becoming co-ed. Carrie Salinas reports.
Tradition has now been broken due to Oak Ridge now having both males and females reside in the hall. Due to the high number of incoming freshmen, housing has become limited for students on campus. Director of Housing, Chuck Major, goes in more depth to the main reasons why.
The main reason that we moved that way was because we were expanding our living learning communities, and one of the new ones was going to be for first year experience for new freshmen, and we felt that Horan and Oak Ridge were normally predominantly freshmen.
With a good majority of the residents now being male, the hall itself had to make some changes. The hall now has the first floor all male and even has made some progress on male bathrooms. Freshman Will Howard notes how smooth the transition was for Oak Ridge having this big change.
It's funny, you know, talking to upperclassmen about it, I get a lot of times like, wait, isn't Oak Ridge the all-girls dorm? So I have to explain a lot, but this being my first year in college, it doesn't really feel strange at all.
Even though this is already a huge change for everyone living on campus, there are some even bigger plans for the future. The plan to build a new residence hall on upper campus has paused, but will be starting up again sometime soon. After that, Towers Hall will be renovated to make more space for incoming students.
UW-Eau Claire is currently working to rezone three properties that the university owns on Roosevelt Avenue near the campus. The rezoning request is to change the three houses from R1 to P Public and continue to use the houses as rentals for staff, visiting scholars, and their families. Mike Rindo, Assistant Chancellor for Facilities and University Relations, says that the main drives behind the request are that it would be zoned like the rest of the university's buildings, which are all P Public, and that it would allow more than three unrelated people to live in one of those houses at any given time. He says it would allow the campus more housing options.
Sometimes people come and stay for a couple of weeks. Sometimes they stay for the whole academic year. And so we were really looking for the flexibility.
The request has been postponed, however, pending discussion in City Council and a public discussion of the plans. Rindo says the concerns are not based around the rezoning of the houses specifically, but the overall plan for the plots. The campus's master plan has identified that area as the potential site of a new small dorm on lower campus to help replace Catherine Thomas and Putnam dorms after those are eventually closed. He says that some of the concerns that have been raised to him include increased traffic and noise from more students in the area and keeping the buildings in character with the neighborhood.
And, you know, in the master plan we say that one of our principles is to honor the integrity of our surrounding neighborhoods and to help them flourish. So we need to be mindful of that whenever we're having discussions.
There is no current plans for the dorm being developed, and Rindo says that project is far down on the list of priorities in construction on campus. Public discussion will be available for the rezoning request, however, which is asking to continue to use the houses as they are, and that will be scheduled by the City Council for sometime in October. Glenn Olson, Blue Gold News. Students at UW-Eau Claire are getting some extra help finding food thanks to a new program at the university. Carrie Salinas has that story.
Now that the new year has begun, there are many new things that the campus has to offer. One of the biggest things to know about is the Campus Harvest Food Pantry. All over campuses, there is a problem among students. While having to pay for everything else, buying food gets lost in the mix. On September 2nd, Administrative Supervisor Julie Carr and many others opened up this food pantry for students with food insecurities.
We know that there's food need in our community with just community members and families. There's a great food need, and it keeps getting worse and worse every year, unfortunately. There was also talk on campus. Students meet with counselors on campus. They meet with different offices on campus, and these offices were starting to talk that there are students out there that can't afford to buy food. They would find that out meeting with these students. And also, if you look at, there's been articles written around the country about, you know, different areas. Students are in need of food. They can't afford food. They can afford, you know, they manage to scrape up enough money for tuition, maybe for some room and board, but they end up having to sacrifice something because they don't have enough money for everything, and food a lot of times is what they end up sacrificing, which isn't necessarily good because you need a good, healthy, you know, nutritional, balanced diet in order to do well in school.
Any student on campus has access to the new food pantry located in the basement of Schofield Hall. To receive any items, all a student would need is their blue gold ID. The pantry is open to any type of donations, whether it be non-perishables or even money. Anyone in the Eau Claire area is allowed to donate. With the monetary donations, they are able to take $1 that is donated and buy up to $10 worth of food from the local Feed My People food bank. The food pantry is only open between certain hours, but is also willing to make arrangements if needed. If you wish to donate certain items, you must contact the food pantry and they can list off specifics if you'd like. Monetary donations can be either face-to-face, cash, or check, and you're even able to donate on their website if that's easier. So many students are taking advantage of this opportunity, and the campus harvest is already off to a good start. So any student who is unsure is more than welcome to use this great facility. Curious Salinas, Blue Gold News.
That's all the news for this hour, but stay tuned for the rest of Hour 5 on Blue Gold Radio 89.7 WUEC Eau Claire. For Blue Gold News, I'm Glenn Olson.
Thanks, Glenn. Speaking of news, The Spectator has been the official student publication of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire since 1923. 91 years later, it's the same name with a different style. The Spectator will be bringing you exclusive online as well as multimedia content throughout the week on spectatornews.com to complement a print edition every other Thursday. Don't miss out on the most up-to-date campus news and check out The Spectator on paper racks across campus as well as spectatornews.com. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Kayla Menzie, your host for Hour 1. Up next, we have my Exploring the Arts Entertainment segment. This week, I talked with Jerry Tovo, a photographer from St. Louis, Missouri, who is in town to present his project, They May Have Been Heroes. Hello, and welcome to Exploring the Arts. I'm your host, Kayla Menzie. This week, I talked with Jerry Tovo, a photographer from St. Louis, Missouri, who is in town this week to present his series, They May Have Been Heroes. The exhibit will be displayed in the hallway of the Art and Design Department in Haas Fine Arts Center at UW-Eau Claire until October 31st. The exhibit features homeless veterans from around the country. I talked with him about himself, his work, and this specific exhibit. Check it out. So I'm here with Jerry Tovo. He is a photographer from St. Louis. And he has an exhibit called They May Have Been Heroes that will be here in Eau Claire until October 31st. So thanks for sitting down with me, Jerry.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the project.
Well, you can't describe it in just a little bit. It started probably 3.5 years ago when I thought maybe I could give what I do best back to the people who I served with, and that's do fine art evocative photographs of homeless people, and with that hoping to make many, many other people aware of just how severe the problem is at this point.
So tell me a little bit about your background with the military.
Okay. I was drafted in 1966, actually on Friday the 13th. I thought I was going to die on the bus going down to Fort Leonard Wood, and spent 2 years in the Army. 90% of that time, I was a drill sergeant. Through basic training, I went to leadership school, then I went to advanced training, then out of advanced training, I went to drill corporal school, and then drill sergeant school. And then the rest is pretty much drill sergeantism.
So things that have to do with veterans are kind of close to you.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm very, having not gone to Vietnam, fortuitously lucky not to go. Back now I feel a little bit guilty that I haven't gone to Vietnam, so I do kind of relate to the people who went and maybe were injured in one way or another.
How long have you been working on this project?
We're pushing 3 years now. It's we started in late 2011 and had a basic direction, but we've never done it before, so we just kind of found our way along the path and made it this far.
So what about this project is so important? Like, what do you want viewers to take away from this project?
I just mostly want people to understand that homeless people, and in this case, homeless veterans, all have their own story. They're all where they are now for their own reason. I have not found two people who have exactly the same reason. It's all a one-by-one opportunity or case, and there's a myriad of reasons why they are, and there's a myriad of reasons why they shouldn't be. So, we hope that we can inspire people to come along and pitch in and help fight this crisis.
So what inspired the name of the project, They May Have Been Heroes? What's the significance of They May Have Been?
Well, we thought of a lot of different names, and we reached out to a lot of creative people to help with naming. The one that stuck was They May Have Been Heroes, because a lot of people look at homeless veterans and they think they're just a bunch of slugs. They were the trench people, the grubs. But you can't tell that. When you look at these people, they may have been a hero. They may have contributed significantly to the victory in a war, one war, a couple wars. And indeed, we have that case. We didn't want to say everyone was heroes because we know that's not true. Just because you were in the Army or the Air Force, whatever, it doesn't make you a hero. But things that do happen within those military services do make you stand out as a hero. So there's certainly that option that some of these people who we look down on were heroes and deserve much more recognition than they get. So.
How did you find these people? Because looking at the little bit of the project that I've seen, these people aren't from one area. So how do you come about these people?
Well, logistically, that's been an issue from the start. We did a lot of research online, trying to find other organizations that were similar to what we were trying to do. And we'd reach out to those people and find out who was most likely to help us. It's very important that we have boots on the ground when we get someplace, because we've learned you just can't pack up the van and head to someplace and expect to find the subjects you're looking for. So it's evolved a little bit. We started with the VA, and we'd hope the VA would really be the trigger for this, because they have access to this kind of information. But then we got into a little bit of a thing with the VA where they kind of clammed up, because, we feel maybe they thought we were competing with them. They were trying as hard as they could to end homelessness among veterans, and we were out there taking pictures showing how many homeless veterans there were. So that's the only thing we could figure, was that maybe they felt that we were opposing their efforts. But that wasn't the case at all. So we got some initial help with them, and they started doing some good work, and all of a sudden it just came to a stop. So basically we went back to finding, likely areas. We did research. We know that California and Florida and Texas and New York are the major cities, centers for homeless people in general. So we work there. We try and find someone we can meet when we get there. And if we can find someone who can be a tour guide and help us out, that's really, really great.
What's your favorite part about learning these people's stories?
Well, I don't know if there's favorite part of it is the right word to say. It's fascinating that their stories are all so varied. Some of these people are genuinely hurt. They're mentally disturbed because of their service. Others are not so. Some actually are flying under the radar. They just don't want to be found. So we avoid those kind of situations. But generally, there's some heart-wrenching stories that are out there, and it gives you pause as to, why they are and why aren't they getting more help than they are.
Is there anybody else that you're working with on this project? Do you have people kind of supporting you and helping you with this?
We have a lot of verbal support, and I have a raft of volunteers. And in general, we have made contact with a lot of like organizations, and we've worked very well with them. There's the local U.S. Vets organization is very supportive of what we're doing. It's a national organization. There's 11 or 12 chapters, and we work hand in hand with the U.S. vets. You know, lots of people volunteer, and we work with organizations with similar and like goals as ours.
Okay. Yeah. What other, I know you've mentioned the VA already, what other kinds of organizations have you been working with?
Well, like I said, the U.S. Vets is strong. There's an organization down in Florida that in Brevard County that's very much like ours. We worked with a group in Indianapolis that works with homeless veterans. And we've touched base with pretty much, you know, every organization, like-minded organization in the eastern part of the country that we can. We're talking to people in Denver around the VFW post there and some other organizations, a lot of vet organizations in Los Angeles that we're working with at this time. So we have a lot of suggestions and a lot of places to turn to, just a matter of, at this point, being able to finance the travel expenses to do it.
How have you been financing the project so far?
Well, we've had a few donors. And, you know, I really thought when we started this project that corporate donations would carry it. But there's kind of a paralysis going on because the corporations are so hit upon by other similar organizations, and it's kind of getting weary of the whole vet thing. Unfortunately, there's a lot of veterans organizations out there that aren't 100% vet oriented. There's a lot of people who are just using it as excuse to get money. But there are some good ones out there, but there's just so many right now, it's hard to compete. And nobody wants to share the money they get, you know, from the VA or wherever else. They're all pretty tight-fisted. They don't want to share information because they have to watch out for their budgets as well.
Do you ever run into people who are not as open-minded about sharing their stories? You know, those people that just want to keep it to themselves? And
oh, sure. There are people that don't want to get involved at all. And a lot of those people are flying under the radar. You know, they have warrants for arrest or whatever, trying to avoid child care payments, a myriad of other things. But, yeah, a lot of them don't. And I was surprised. I thought everybody would just glom onto this project because it was, you know, I was out there hopefully to help them. But the reasons they don't want to be seen get fairly obvious. I mean, they're just flying under the radar.
Yeah, is it mostly people who do want to share their story, or is it more the people that kind of don't?
Well, most everyone is leery to start with. I mean, I hear they don't know me. You know, I have a very little time to get their confidence, to gain their confidence. And some people trust me immediately, and some people are very wary, and they don't have a lot to say, and for various reasons. Maybe some are embarrassed, and some just don't want to share their private lives.
How do you go about gaining that trust with people?
Well, because I have military experience, you know, that's pretty much the first thing I go to. We find out where they served and what branch they served and what conflict they served in. I have enough experience and I can kind of relate to any of those, you know, just through conversations. So that's the very, very first thing. And the fact that I was a drill sergeant pretty much strikes a chord with everyone, because everyone remembers their drill sergeant. So that's the easiest path. And then we just look for common fields to discuss. It's pretty much like anybody would have with striking up a relationship on the streets with anybody else. So we just look for common chords.
So what brought you and this project to Eau Claire?
Well, a friend of mine who is a fine artist up here in Eau Claire is very familiar with the project, the art department here. And he was smitten with my project, and he made the suggestion that the people here at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire contact me and see if I had any interest. And coincidentally, they have a project running that's Dust on the Boots, and it just fit. It was a natural fit. It's a fairly small event compared to what we would normally do, but the people here are just so great that we wanted to do what we could to help. So.
Where is this project headed in the future?
Well, our goal has always been to have a gala opening in Washington, D.C. Secondary, we'd hope that we'd have a traveling exhibit, and we've had some initial conversations with the Smithsonian. They have a division called Sites, and they do traveling exhibits. So we're looking to continue, you know, having exhibits as we continue to shoot. That helps raise a little more awareness for our project and hopefully funding. But ultimately, we like to end up in Washington, D.C. And there's been talk about, you know, some of the images going to the National Portrait Gallery. And it's interesting because I would never have thought, you know, my ego would let me think that we'd be involved with the Smithsonian, because that's just such an incredible institution. So that's our goal. I think if we could have an opening somehow related to the Smithsonian in D.C., that'd be great.
So this is kind of an ongoing project. I mean, you just said, well, we're still taking pictures. So
well, when we first started, I stood up and said, I'm going to travel the country. We've covered pretty much the eastern half of the country. And the show is amazing as it stands. I mean, everyone asks me, why do I feel like I need to continue, because it's such an amazing show. I just think that since I said that's what I was going to do, I should do what I said I was going to do. And I feel we should travel, you know, the western part of the country to make it complete.
So I guess the last thing I'm a little curious about is, how did you get started in photography?
Well, it's an interesting thing. Actually, I was going to be an architect, but I didn't have anything burning inside of me that was going to change the world of architecture. So I waffled about getting into the right school and ended up going to Southern Illinois University Carbondale because my friends were going there. I took some pre-engineering courses that kind of got close to architecture, but I could see that wasn't where I wanted to go. And I changed to marketing. I took photography as a supplement to that. And I just fell in love with the magic of the darkroom. And I knew that first day when I saw that print come up in the developer that that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. That's been my heart and soul ever since then. I strive to do that.
What other types of work have you done in the past?
Well, mostly, you know, I've been a commercial photographer. I have a myriad of studios, very large commercial studios, working with multiple photographers. But we do advertising and brochures and annual reports and all the type of things that commercial photographers do. So that's been my main cord, you know, throughout my career. It's going on 50 some years now since I started back in school. I took a 7-year break when the business was just awful. And I worked for Kodak for 7 years, and that's really where the root of this started, because digital photography really is truly a medium for black and white photography. And I just developed a niche in black and white digital photography, and I extended it onto this project.
Awesome. Well, Jerry, thank you so much for sharing about yourself and this project. Mm-hmm. I know I'm really excited to see the full project. And the show will be here in Eau Claire until October 31st, so plenty of time for people to go see it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, thanks again.
Well, thank you for having me.
And good luck with everything in the future.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. That was Jerry Tovo, a photographer from St. Louis, Missouri, here to present his series, They May Have Been Heroes. Check out the exhibit in the hallway of the Art and Design Department in Haas Fine Arts Center at UW-Eau Claire until October 31st. That's all the time we have for Exploring the Arts this week. I'm your host, Kayla Menzie. Tune in next week for more entertainment news and info. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. If you're just tuning in, I'm Kayla Menzie, your host for Hour 1. Up next, we have Sammy Wenzel with a movie review in Sammy Says. This week, she will be reviewing the movie Old Boys.
Hi everyone, Sammy Wenzel here with your weekly movie review on Sammy Says. So this week's film was Old Boy. This is a 2003 South Korean film. There is a 2013 American version, but my review is going to be on the original Korean version. Okay, so, oh boy, where do I even begin with this movie? Seriously, this movie definitely sent my mind and entire emotional being on a psychological roller coaster. This movie has been considered a mystery drama thriller. I will definitely get to tell you right now that this movie is filled with a lot of drama and a lot of action. This will have been my second time watching this film, and I'm definitely going to say that I was unprepared for both of the times. Trust me, if you choose to watch this movie, it is going to throw your mind for a loop. Old Boy starts right away with a suspenseful action scene, and then it reels you back in with scenes to create a bit of a backstory for the main character, whose name is Odesu, to help its audience get a better feel for how this character may behave through the rest of the film. But trust me when I say that the backstory does not prepare you for half of what this character ends up going through. The plot of Old Boy is based around the main character's drive for revenge. He wants revenge on the last 15 years of his life that have basically been stolen from him. When watching this movie, you see that Odesu is locked up in what is a supposed prison. He's there for 15 years, and he doesn't know why. So, of course, he's angry and vengeful, so he sets out to find whoever put him in there. While watching this movie, I got a sense of a stereotypical action movie. And by that, I mean that this movie has those fight scenes where you see them in basically every other action movie. Fists flying, excessive blood, one man against 40 others, and of course, there's complimentary fight scene music to set an appropriate tone. Not only does this movie pack its own punch through the action it delivers, it also throws a lot of cringeworthy scenes at its audience. I'm going to tell you right now, if you have even the slightest of a weak stomach, and you don't like excessive amounts of violence, then Old Boy is probably not the movie for you. But if you think you can handle anything that this movie may come up with, you may end up thinking twice about that after this movie. But I will say that I feel that the nerve-pinching scenes that are peppered all over this movie do benefit it overall in the emotion of it. And I believe that that's what the writers were going for. This movie could be confusing to first-time viewers if you're not intently watching it. I say this because there are a lot of continuity errors throughout the movie. Bits and pieces of information are missing. But the reason for this is because you're seeing all of the actions and events of the past and the present unfold through the main character's eyes, of Odesu's eyes, because he's your narrator. And I personally feel like the writers did this on purpose so that the audience, you feel more connected to Odesu. In that way, I feel like that was definitely effective for this movie. Old Boy is a very lengthy, very detailed film. It lasts approximately 2 hours, and even with that amount of time, you're definitely left wondering. But in a good way. By that, I mean it leaves you wondering about events that don't really need to be explained to enhance the movie. Things that give this movie, I guess, its own special charm, if charm is what you want to call it. In the beginning of the movie, Odesu is put under hypnosis, and that hypnosis is brought back in the end as well. So my personal biggest wondering is, did the events of this film even happen? Or has he been hypnotized through this whole thing? Or is he hallucinating some bits and pieces? That's my biggest wondering. Maybe if you end up watching the film, maybe you can have your own personal interpretation for the ending, for the explanation of all that. I would recommend this film to anyone who likes major plot twists and suspenseful scenes, interesting plot concepts in general. But I heed my own personal warning that this film definitely has a huge plot twist that is most likely gonna make you cringe and wish that it, and maybe the entire film, had not even happened. But I cannot reveal that to you because it is an important piece of the movie as a whole, and you'll definitely just have to watch it for yourself to find out, if you dare. If you're an audience member who does not think they can handle what this movie may entail, from what I've just told you, or you don't like foreign films, because as I had said earlier, this is a Korean film, so it's completely in Korean with English subtitles, then I suggest you should start watching some foreign films, because they can be great. But I guess maybe don't watch this film for the other aspects. Near the end of this movie, there is a big reveal of the previous events that have been happening throughout the film, which I guess could be very helpful if you get lost during the movie, or confused. I just found like this scene was shot quote-unquote cheesy in a way. A lot of the positioning of the characters and the way the camera angle was combined with that, it just personally didn't work for me. But if you watch the movie, maybe you can get past that. It really was only about 5 minutes near the end of the movie, so overall, the rest of the scenes in the movie were shot pretty well. I came to my personal realization that this movie is just a bunch of pent-up rage, and the scenes are in need of revenge over a high school rumor. And it all came to this basically over crazy events throughout the movie, and crazy is really the only word that I can use to describe this movie. From an audience member's standpoint, I will say that everyone in this movie is just wrong, and they all need help. But from a critic's standpoint, I feel like in the end, everyone kind of gets their poetic justice served. Okay, so that's really all I have to say about this week's film, Old Boy. Thank you very much for tuning into this week's segment of Sammy Says. Feel free to email me any suggestions for next week's film at wensels@uwec.edu. Thanks again for listening. All right, back to you, Kayla.
Thanks, Sammy. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Kayla Menzie, your host for Hour 1. Coming up next, we have Tyler Henderson and Kyle Neighbor bringing you local and national sports for the week.
Welcome to Blue Gold Radio 89.7 WUEC-FM. This is your Eau Claire Sports Recap on Blue Gold Radio. I'm Kyle Neighbor. We'll start with men's golf. The UW-Eau Claire men's golf team finished in seventh place after two rounds of competition at home in the Frank Wigglesworth Blue Gold Invitational. The men's golf team was at the Gustavus Adolphus Twin Cities Classic this past weekend and will definitely look to avenge that rough finish. Women's soccer had a tough test as they had four straight road games. They started with Concordia Moorhead and they lost 2-0. They continued their rough road trip when the team traveled to Wheaton College, where they fell to the Thunder 5-0 at Joe Bean Stadium. Wheaton, ranked 10th in the last NSCAA poll, improved to 8-1. Finally, the Blue Golds opened up conference play against UW-Lacrosse, and they have UW-Superior before they finally come home on Saturday to take on the Warhawks from UW-Whitewater. Volleyball played on Friday night, and they beat UW-Superior 3-0. This was the Blue Golds' 36th straight over the Yellow Jackets, their last loss coming October 1st, 1994, and Eau Claire has not lost at UW-Superior since September 22nd, 1990, before I was even born. That's an incredible streak. The Blue Golds now lead the series 70-21, holding a 62-2 record against Superior since 1985. They will play the Pointers of Stevens Point on Wednesday at home. Be sure to get out there and support your women's volleyball team. Women's golf will be at the WIAC Championship over the weekend, which will be a great chance to show off their amazing talent. Good luck, girls. The women's tennis team has a pair of matches this weekend as they take on UW-Stevens Point on Saturday and Oshkosh on Sunday. Both of those matches are at home, so be sure to support them. Finally, we have the big-ticket item, the Blue Gold football team. Blue Gold football will be returning this week after taking this past week off, and this one will be a big one. This is their third-ranked team of the season, and they are fired up. They will be taking on UW-Platteville. The Pioneers come in, checked in as the 13th-ranked team, and they will be angry as they're looking to avenge a 28-7 loss to North Central. Kickoff is set for 2:30 p.m. at Carson Park, and we know there are going to be a lot of people out there. As I mentioned before, this is homecoming week, so be sure to get out there and support all of your Blue Gold teams. We have a number of them at home this week, as I mentioned, and this will be an excellent week for sports and school spirit. There are tons of activities out there to do, so get involved, Blue Gold fans. You need to be there. For Blue Gold Radio 89.7 WUEC-FM, I'm Kyle Neighbor. Have a great homecoming week.
Thanks for that sports update, Tyler and Kyle. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Kayla Menzie, your host for Hour 1. Up next, Tyler Henderson returns, joined by Ryan Laughlin, for a commentary on the latest in sports.
Welcome to the Rube Tube with Rye and Ty. I am Ty.
And I'm Rye.
This is Rye, and we are on WUECFM 89.7 talking some sports with you today. So we've got some really great topics today. It was a crazy week in the world of sports as we said goodbye to one of the greatest to ever play the game of baseball.
And we're not talking about me, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, okay. We knew that. But Derek Jeter of the New York Yankees, his entire career, just wrapped up his final, well, it hasn't wrapped up the season yet, but he wrapped up his final home game in stellar fashion. Jeter hitting the walk-off single, driving in a run in the ninth inning against the Orioles the other night. And Ryan, I just got to ask, what do you think, first of all, he meant to the game of baseball, and second of all, could you have sent him off any better?
Well, I have to preface that with, first of all, letting myself say, I hate the Yankees.
And I can't talk about this without saying how much I hate the Yankees. They're like three, and I know all you Wisconsin Rubes out there are gonna hate me. I'm a Twin Cities boy. It goes North Dakota Fighting Sioux, hate them. Packers, hate them. And then those damn Bronx Bombers, those Pinstripes, hate them. However, after saying that, I have to say, once you understand my fiery hatred for the Yankees, I respect number two like none other. I think it's hard not to. The guy's played hard in an era when steroids run rampant. He stayed clean. He worked hard. He's a winner in that pressure cooker that is New York. And to walk out, with getting back to what you asked, to go out with a win, and I know I find myself crazy because I actually wish the Yankees were in the playoffs this year. I can't even believe I wish
I could have seen that too.
It blows me away that I'm saying those words just came out of my mouth. I can't believe it. But Derek Jeter's career has been so phenomenal. He's been such an inspiration. He is Mr. Baseball, Mr. America, Mr. October. He was truly amazing. And that walk-off hit, I mean, if I was there, I guarantee you I would have been in tears. I was almost in tears watching freaking SportsCenter. It was an incredible, incredible game. He's maybe one of the best shortstops of all time, if not the best, and hell of a career by Derek Jeter.
No doubt. And, Jeter, 2 for 5 in that game, 3 RBIs. He ripped a double off the wall. That one almost went over the fence in the first inning.
I think everybody thought it was out.
I know, everyone thought it was out. That would have been crazy, but it got crazier, definitely. He drove a man in from second base with a single in the ninth inning, and it was dramatic fashion. They won the game. They will not make the playoffs, but you know they weren't a terrible team this year. They're over 500. They're I think they're about six games out of the last wild card spot. So they're not going to make it. But man, what a send off for Derek Jeter, one of the greatest ever play the game.
Indeed.
So he leaves baseball as the Yankees leader in singles, doubles. I believe he also leads the Yankees in hits in general.
You know, one thing I thought was cool too is that he is finishing. He said his last image of Yankee Stadium wanted to be the image of standing at shortstop. And he says he thinks that's one of the best looks, because you know he's finishing his career playing in Boston, where he will DH. He finished his shortstop career playing at Yankee Stadium, and he said in his post-game presser that he didn't mean any disrespect to Red Sox fans by not taking the field at shortstop, but he wanted to finish his career playing shortstop in the new Yankee Stadium, the house that Jeter built. I think that was a beautiful little twist to the an incredible career.
Definitely. We will miss Derek Jeter. So on to some... Yeah, you know, an interesting story in my mind.
This is huge, man.
This is not huge.
This is ginormous.
Okay, Ryan loves this. Ryan's eating this up.
Forget the Jeter thing, man. This is Packer country.
Ryan, let's go and pause. You're gonna pause for a moment.
Yes, sir.
You're gonna pause for a moment. As a lifelong Packer fan, I have been blessed. I have been blessed with quarterbacks. Quarterback play has not been at a loss in Packer country, and. You know, Ryan was talking about how he hates the Packers. Man, I just don't hate the Vikings because they've never been that much of a threat.
When people say, you're a Vikings fan, I say, hey, don't be mad. Just feel bad for me, man.
I feel bad for Ryan. It's a rough life. He leads a rough life. So anyway, point is, Aaron Rodgers started the season a little bit rough. He had a halfway decent game against the Jets in week 2, but week 1 and week 3 not so hot. Last week was one of his worst games in a Packer uniform, losing to the Lions 19-7. And a lot of people are pointing fingers at a particular woman, an actress named Olivia Munn, Aaron Rodgers' girlfriend. People seem to think that single Aaron Rodgers is better at football than the taken Aaron Rodgers. Ryan, what do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He lost his mojo, man. Olivia Munn is literally sucking Aaron Rodgers' mojo. It's over. Pack it up. Like, start, I don't know, who's your backup there? I don't even know. It's over.
I don't know.
With Dom Capers' defense. With Dom Capers' defense, it's no. You guys don't have a leg to stand on anymore. Here come my purple, baby.
Oh,
it's the Kate Upton effect.
Okay, first of all, excuse me. Scott Tolzien
was a great quarterback for the Badgers and is now the third string quarterback for Packers. So let me tell you, he's
warm
ready
him up,
to go.
12 days are numbered.
No, they're not. So I think it's ridiculous that people are blaming
Look at Justin
Olivia
Verlander.
Munn.
Justin Verlander, one of the dominant pitchers in all of baseball, dates the smoke show, Kate Upton, and now look at the guy. He's barely 500, floundering. I'm just saying.
All right. No, I feel you. I do. But
I'll see you in December when the Packers are third in the NFC
let
North.
Let me tell. Well, that wouldn't be terribly shocking, actually. This is a pretty tough NFC North
it
this
is,
year.
It is.
But don't you think that that we wouldn't have much of a show on Sundays if everyone who had a hot wife or girlfriend was struggling on
I'm
the
just
field
saying,
because of it?
Let's look at the facts. Rodgers has been prolific. He's been one of, if not the best quarterback in recent years. And we're a quarter of the way done here in this season, and not impressed. I'd be shaking in my boots when Rodgers
shaking in my cheese head.
Easy. I'd be shaking in my horns, and when Rodgers is on the field. And this year he just doesn't have it. And what's different?
I understand. Olivia I think Munn. That I think no. And here's the thing: the Packers traditionally start off pretty rough in the beginning of the season. And usually Aaron Rodgers isn't the cause for that, but just because Aaron Rodgers is struggling right now, I mean, I think we have to wait a little while to point fingers at Olivia Munn after 3 weeks. And I think this is
Break
a great.
Him up right
hey, you
now.
Know what? You know what? Week four, right here, Chicago Bears at Soldier Field. I'm predicting it right now. Aaron Rodgers throws for 320 plus yards, three TDs, no interceptions.
No, I predict he throws three picks. It'll be a couple tip balls because, Rodgers doesn't make a whole lot of it. But he'll have one touchdown, three picks. You lose to Jay Cutler because he's hot this year. And he's going to come in. Mike McCarthy, Raj, come in here. Yeah, we need to talk about this Olivia Munn situation because not working out for us.
Jay Cutler loves throwing the ball to three different types of people: Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, and the Green Bay Packers. So I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned, all right? I think we've exhausted that topic. I think that
we can both agree.
I think we can both agree that Aaron Rodgers is great. Anyway, so Jameis Winston is the next news, another quarterback. Jameis Winston, quarterback for the Florida State Seminoles, the Heisman winner last year. He is a mess. He's a mess. I'd like to hear what your opinion is on his latest tirade, screaming obscenities at the top of his lungs outside of the student center at Florida State after, over the summer, stealing crab legs from a local store.
And this is after an alleged sexual assault that never panned out for reasons.
In court, it kind of got passed over. And now we're hearing that there's a possibility that accuser was paid off, and not necessarily by Winston. We don't know by who, but we're hearing that the accuser was paid off. So anyway, Ryan, Jameis Winston, what are your thoughts?
He is an immature, childish coward. He drives me nuts. If you listen to him in his post game conferences, I can't stand listening to him. He's this big shot, arrogant, dumb, disrespectful hothead, and he just everything about him.
Do you
drives
speak
me
to
crazy.
Your mother with that mouth, Ryan?
Where do you think I learned it, Tyler? I just everything about him drives me crazy. He is, and I maybe it's unfair to hold him to this standard because he is a college student, like a couple other guys we know. I don't think if you're in a national spotlight, sorry that we hold you to a higher standard. You have an opportunity to do something great with the skill set and the opportunity you've been given, and you're doing things like standing up on tables and yelling her in the and it just drives me crazy. I think the immaturity level is off the charts, and I can't stand the guy.
You and I talked about it before the show, me trying to go a different angle with this and maybe arguing with you a little bit.
I knew this was going to be hard for you.
I have some thoughts that could go that way, but I don't believe in them, Ryan. I don't believe in them because I agree, Jameis Winston is full of it. I like what you said about the fact that he's got an opportunity to do something special. Not everyone wins the Heisman. Not everyone has the pull that he has. The opportunity at 19, 20 years old to become just such a role model and amazing athlete, and he could make a bunch of money someday. He could, you know, he could do some incredible things. Not everyone is that gifted. I was watching him last year, at the beginning of the year, seeing some highlights of him throwing touchdowns to Kelvin Benjamin, and I was like, man, this guy could win the Heisman this year. Like, you know, week three, I just saw the arm. He looked like Donovan McNabb. I was really impressed. And it's just disappointing. It's disappointing to see that kind of talent just thrown away on a complete idiot like that.
I love name-dropping Donovan McNabb. We should have a segment called Old Dead Vikings Quarterbacks.
We should have a segment
Brad
about
Johnson.
Terrible Vikings quarterbacks in general. We could go for an entire we have 13 and a half minutes, everybody. We could go 14 or more on how terrible Vikings quarterbacks have been in the past 22 years when we have been alive.
Did you see my boy Tarvaris Jackson come out and win that coin toss, though?
Tarvaris is the one that got away.
T-Jack.
T-Jack. Woo! Anyway, we're off topic. Jameis Winston, he's not on our hot list.
No, he's not. I appreciate you sticking with – I mean, I knew it was going to be hard for you to go the other way on this, but I appreciate you sticking with your guns. I can't stand the guy. And you know what? It's still – the great thing about this is he's got an opportunity to turn things around. I hope he does just for his sake. He could be a role model. He could do some great things. And it's not over for him. He's still a young man. But time's ticking. I can't put up with this shenanigans anymore, especially from – someone that's in the public eye.
I know. All right. Well, you know, that wraps up our show this week. I feel like it goes by too quick. It goes by too quick. So this is the Ryan, the Rube Tube with
the
Ryan Ty.
The Rube Tube with Ryan
and,
Ty.
And this is Ryan. I am Ty. And we'll see you next week on WUEC FM 89.7.
Good night.
That concludes sports for the week. Thanks, Tyler and Ryan. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. If you're just tuning in, I'm Kayla Menzie, your host for Hour 1. Up next is Jake's Music Picks. Tune in for music you might never have heard of. This week, he will be featuring music from the metal genre.
Greetings, listeners. This is Jake Paulus with the weekly music picks on Blue Gold Radio 89.7 FM. My theme for the week is going to be a bit more niche than the last time, but I'm sure you'll all enjoy it. Tonight's music is all metal. Now, there is a ton of genres to metal, and the amount tends to vary depending on about how much of a jerk you are in the YouTube's comment section. However, first up, I've got something a bit more classic. It'll be The Trooper by Iron Maiden. Iron Maiden formed way back in 1975 and is still playing to this very day. They formed up in Leighton, East London. Metal songs almost always, as a rule, tend to run a little bit long, so I'm gonna get us underway. This is Iron Maiden's The Trooper. And I'm back. If you just turned into Blue Gold Radio, that was The Trooper by Iron Maiden. Did you play it loud? Well, play it louder. Next up, we're diving into the deep end of metal with Death Metal by the band Death Clock. It's not actually a physical band, but if you know about the Gorillaz, Death Clock is actually virtual. It was created back in 2006 and accompanies its own TV show parodying the fame and life of big music stars through the veil of heavy metal music. The show is called Metalocalypse, and it plays on the TV channel Adult Swim. This song is off their Death Album 2, and is actually about college, albeit death metal college. This is Go Forth and Die.
Inside a box, for long years, hiding from the world.
Brutal stuff, right? That was absolutely all the time I've got for you guys tonight, but if you tune in next week, I'll have more music picks for you. Now we're going back to Kayla.
Thanks for the music, Jake. We'll hear more from you again next week. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Kayla Menzie, your host for Hour 1. We're almost out of time for Hour 1, but before I send it over to Hour 2, here is my event pick of the week. This week, I would like to talk about the musical Young Frankenstein, being presented by the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, October 2nd through the 5th. Young Frankenstein is a funny musical based on the Mel Brooks comedy masterpiece starring Gene Wilder, and features a madcap group of characters, dancing, and great songs, including Puttin' on the Ritz. Performances will take place at the State Theater in downtown Eau Claire. Tickets can be purchased on the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild's website, www.cvtg.org. Tickets are $20 for adults, $18 for seniors, and $10 for students and youth. There will be one performance each day. Check out the website for the full schedule and more information. Again, that's www.cvtg.org. I'm thinking that I will probably go check out one of the performances. I've never seen Young Frankenstein, so I don't know exactly what happens, but I've heard some very good things about the story, and I know that the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild always does a fantastic job. If you know of an event coming up soon that you think I should feature as my event pick of the week, let me know. Email me at menziike@gmail.com. Well, that wraps up Hour 1. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Kayla Menzie, and it has been my pleasure to be your host for this past hour. I'll be back next week, but for now, stay tuned and listen to Hour 2 with Zen.